If the Raptors want a chance of winning that series, obviously they have to win in Cleveland, and preferably they do it early in the season. Joining us to chat about that series and the rest of the NBA playoffs, Dan Feldman, NBA writer for NBC's Pro Basketball Talk. Dan, thanks very much for joining us. Maybe the Cleveland Cavaliers have weaknesses, not maybe, on the defensive end of the ball. They do. But Dan, this is a team that in round one and round two is shown in the last couple of years they are virtually unstoppable. What kind of a chance do you give the Raptors against them?
A fighting chance. I think these are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. I think if anybody can knock off the Cavs before the finals, it is Toronto. I like Toronto's guards, obviously. I think maybe, I don't want to get too ahead of myself because I think this all the time and it never comes true, but maybe those guards are finding a way how to score, how to adjust to the playoffs. And then I really like those midseason acquisitions, Serge Ibaka, P.J. Tucker, bringing some toughness, bringing some floor spacing to go with the defense, that combination. Is it the type of team that could make life difficult for the Cavs?
Well, and that's the hope here in Toronto. And you referred to the acquisitions, Ibaka and Tucker. And, you know, Dan, the Raptors, people talk about Cleveland not being quite the same team as last year, especially defensively. Neither are the Raptors. But the hope from the Raptors' perspective is they're that much better defensively, have a different look they can give Cleveland. And maybe that's a difference this time.
I absolutely think it could be. I mean, Jonas Valanciunas, I'm a fan of his, but the way he plays, it's tough. It's tough in the playoffs. His lack of mobility, it's something a lot of teams, especially the Cavs, can expose by shooting a lot from outside, by going small, and it's tough for him. So they have this other option where you can put Serge Ibaka at center, P.J. Tucker power forward. I like it a lot. I mean, these guys are tough, and so you get the advantages of them being skilled, being a little smaller, a little more skilled, but you're not losing any of the toughness. It's a real nice combination.
Agreed. Dan Feldman with us from NBC's Pro Basketball Talk. I'm Roger Lajoie. Great you're along with us here on Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network Wraps. And Cavs getting underway on Monday. Games 3 and 4 will be available on Sportsnet. Okay, Dan, let's talk about some of the other series. Washington and Boston hooking up. Boston, the number one seed. Cleveland, obviously, the defending champions. And a lot of people give Boston the number one seed just as a formality. I don't know about that. I felt they earned it. They did enough, and obviously it meant more to them than it did to the Cavs. And the quote-unquote reward is you play Washington instead of Toronto or Cleveland in round two. In your mind, how do these two teams match up?
They're very even. I have not decided who I'm going to pick to win the series. It's very close. It's tough to get a read on. These are two teams that don't like each other. Like, they had a little bit of a rivalry during the regular season. There was a game in, I think, February, maybe March, where the Wizards were all black to the game for the Celtics figurative funeral. Well, they're not dead. They still got the number one seed. They're still here in the playoffs. And, you know, these teams, it's going to be testy. It's going to be really about the point guards, John Wall, Isaiah Thomas. Who wins that matchup? Isaiah Thomas is better offensively. John Wall is better defensively. Who's better overall? That could swing the series.
I'm glad you brought up John Wall because, you know, several people I've talked to in previewing the start of the NBA playoffs brought him up as really a guy that does not get the credit he deserves in terms of what he brings to the party, especially on the defensive side, and what he's done to keep the Wizards competitive this year in the division. And when you talk about him and Thomas, clearly they're the stars of the series. And one wonders, you know, especially, Dan, because the Celtics really are not playoff tested at all, that maybe there's a bit of an advantage for Washington from that standpoint.
Definitely. I think that is something that matters. Wall has really stepped it up in the playoffs this year. If you look at their series with the Hawks, he was good pretty much every game. Even a down game for him was a very good game, where some of the other Wizards, they were a little more up and down. Bradley Beal was mostly good, but even he was up and down. So they really rely on Wall to get everybody going, to get himself going, to get everybody locked in. The question for the Wizards, sort of like the Cavs, although on a lesser scale because the Wizards just don't have that same upside, is the defense and why they haven't tuned in on defense in a meaningful way yet.
No, that's the case, and you're right, and we'll see what happens. back to the Celtics, I got to believe, too, another factor, Dan, is, and I don't know if they'll regret it. Well, you know, if they lose to Washington, I guess they will regret it. But at the trade deadline, where the Raptors kind of went all in, making the moves for Ibaka and Tucker, taking some chances and adding, the Celtics had the opportunity to, and, you know, there was some talk with the deal with the Bulls, never came to fruition. And end of the day, you know, they felt that, well, we're going to get a high pick next year. There's still better years ahead for us, and we'll take our chances with what we have, as opposed to the Raptors really deciding if we're going to catch the Cavs, now would be the year. What did you think of that decision to start with? And do you think, you know, they may, you know, regret it if they come up just short? Because let's face it, you know, there are a lot of teams in the NBA that'll tell you, if you think you have a chance to win this year, you got to take it.
Well, let's start with this. We don't know what they would have had to give up to get Jimmy Butler or Paul George. So that's the big question mark. Should they have done it? Shouldn't they have? You know, it's impossible to say from the outside without knowing what it would have cost. It probably would have cost some rotation players. It probably would have cost Jay Crowder, maybe Marcus Smart. Like, those guys likely would have been in the deal. So there is no guarantee a trade like this would have necessarily made them better this year. And then if they lose, you could spin it one of two ways. It's up to you. You could spin it, well, they weren't good enough anyway. It's good that they were patient. They've got these Nets picks coming up. They should be building for a couple of years from now because they clearly weren't ready either way. Or you could say, man, if only they had Jimmy Butler or Paul George, they would have won, and we'll never know.
No, very true. And you're right. It's easy enough to make the deal without knowing the other side, and they are what they are. So Boston and Washington going the other series, and, of course, Toronto and Cleveland. In the East, let's look at the Western Conference. And, well, we'll start with the series that is still in progress because we can't really talk about the second round until it's done. But Utah and the Clippers, and, you know, it's funny, and I before the playoffs started, I remember breaking this down. Clippers in Utah finished a regular season with identical 51 and 31 records. Both teams were 29 and 12 at home. Both teams were 31 and 21 in conference play. They were virtually identical. So we can't be terribly surprised we're going to a game seven. But I think after Utah kind of, we thought, took control of the series to make it 3-2, the way the Clippers bounced back in game six to win on the road was kind of un-Clippers-like. That makes me wonder what's going to happen in game seven.
Wouldn't it be so Clippers-like for them to fight back, win the tough game in Utah, and then lose game seven at home? Wouldn't that just be so much like them? And who knows? It's a tough team to read, especially with Blake Griffin injured. They have some role players who can be very good. Austin Rivers, Murray Spates, they were very good in that game six. Are you going to count on them to be good in game seven? Those aren't the guys you want to have to bank on at this time of year, but that's where they are. They need those guys to play well. I think those are the series where the playoff experience really matters. The best player for the Jazz, and a lot of times, has been Joe Johnson, the one super experienced playoff guy on that roster. I guess George Hill is also, but they're really relying on Joe Johnson for an outsized role, where the Clippers, they've been through all this. They know what is at stake, how to play this time of year, and they're answering the call in that regard more. I think the Jazz, with Blake Griffin out, the Jazz are, in a vacuum, a better team, but you get that playoff pressure and all of that, it changes it a little bit.
It does indeed. We'll see what happens. That goes tomorrow afternoon, 3:30, as Utah and the Clippers play in Game 7. Now, it's easy to be the real cynic and say, who cares? Because they're only going to have to play the Golden State Warriors anyway, and there's no way either of those teams are going to beat Golden State. I think very few people are expecting Golden State to lose at any point in this playoff, but does it matter in terms of the matchup, in terms of which of these two might give Golden State the tougher tussle?
I think it does. I definitely think that's Utah because Blake Griffin is hurt. It'd be an interesting conversation if Blake Griffin were still there. But I think the Clippers are just too depleted now. But the Jazz, they play a physical brand of defense, the type of thing that can wear on the team, type of thing that can take a team out of its rhythm where fluky things can happen. And even if the Warriors are still going to beat the Jazz, the Jazz could maybe take more out of the Warriors, make it a little bit easier in the conference finals for Houston or San Antonio. No matter what happens, the Warriors are going to be favored to win every series. But maybe you can tilt the odds just a little bit.
That's indeed the case. And, you know, as we've seen in the NBA many times, Dan, it's particular matchups against certain teams that can make the difference. And we'll see. Game 7 again, Utah and the Clippers is tomorrow. Washington and Boston also goes tomorrow, starting their series in Boston at the TD Garden. All right, finally, the Rockets and the Spurs, and this figures to be one of the most intriguing series of the playoffs, especially the way James Harden and company handled Oklahoma City and moved on. But on the other hand, the San Antonio Spurs are just the Spurs. They don't do anything to excite anybody, and they didn't really, I think, Dan, overly impress people in their opening series against Memphis. But they win basketball games, and they win basketball games at this time of year. They had a six-point advantage or six-game advantage over Houston in the regular season, and they have home court. Any reason to suspect that it won't be San Antonio and Golden State come round three?
Plenty. I mean, start with James Harden, and the Rockets have a scheme that works very well for them. They're just really flourishing. That said, I think the Spurs will win, and I'll add two more reasons. One is Greg Popovich versus Mike D'Antoni. Popovich has just really had success against D'Antoni, especially in the playoffs. He might just have his number. The other is the series before. The Spurs were tested by the Grizzlies in a way that the Rockets weren't by the Thunder. And the Grizzlies play such a smash-mouth brand of basketball. Sometimes you see a team get through that. They get to the other side, and then you play sort of a soft defense like Houston has, and it just feels really easy.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting to see how teams react as they go deeper into the playoffs. And finally, Dan, here's another factor, I guess, that we look at Golden State and a weakness. And, I was talking to a couple of NBA analysts last week about it. Is there any way, they can be susceptible when they get into a situation? Now, we saw Cleveland beat them three straight times last year, but that was before Kevin Durant, and the Warriors, to me, just look ridiculously good. And unless there's an injury or unless something happens where they beat themselves, i.e., horrible shooting all of a sudden from Steph Curry or something we're not expecting, nobody beats them. But when you analyze Golden State, do you see any vulnerabilities that any team could perhaps take advantage of?
Well, their biggest vulnerability is probably that they don't have LeBron James. it's not a big one. It's not a big one because you have Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. They're sitting pretty. But they don't have LeBron. And you get in a series against LeBron, it's exactly what we saw last year. I thought the Warriors were going to win. I thought they were the better team and had a favorable matchup. And LeBron he's so great. He has a way of defying the odds. And, I picked the Warriors to win. And when it got to the end and LeBron, I thought the Warriors would win in six or seven, and when it was 3-1 and they were just cruising, I said, that was my mistake. LeBron's only human, as great as I think he is. I just gave him too much credit. That one person can't do that. Then he wins three straight, and he's not as human as I thought.